Welcome to Real Money with Lisa Chastain. Over the next hour, you will hear from leading industry experts how to establish financial confidence and freedom. Her guests will motivate and inspire you to make those financial decisions that you have been thinking about for weeks and maybe even years. Now, here's your host, Lisa Chastain.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Real Money Show. It is February 6th, 2023. I cannot believe it's February already.
I know.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's not me in the studio alone today. I actually have a whole group of women in the studio today. My guest today is Lindsay Paoli, and I'm really excited for this conversation. Thanks for being here, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for having me. I love being here.
Awesome. We have Cashly, aka Ashley, in the studio today running some behind the scenes. Sometimes I reference her in the show. And we also have a guest, Charlotte, in the house today. You can't see her, but she just said hi. And we're going to have a conversation about your brain today.
Let's do it.
First, we're going to share Lindsay's story. So we do have, typically we have a couple hundred people listening live on the radio, and then we'll have thousands listening throughout the month. And then being local, we have a lot of local people who want to get to know you, and you have your own stage that people have been to your events, and we've been to your event. And so I love the Real Money Show because we kind of pull the curtains back a little bit and share, which you're so good at. I'm definitely a fan. If you don't follow Lindsay on TikTok, you've got to follow Lindsay on TikTok. Your Instagram, do you share everything from TikTok to Instagram?
No. I feel like TikTok is like, my family's not there. So I feel like it's like the unedited version.
Yeah.
And then Instagram is like professional.
Okay. Yeah. So follow her on TikTok. Is it just Lindsay Paoli?
I think I accidentally just changed it. I really don't know what I'm doing on there, honestly. So I think I accidentally changed it to the Mind Performance Coach when I was trying to switch the titles. So it's either Lindsay_Paoli or the Mind Performance Coach.
Okay, so. One or the other. We'll share it out as a part of the after show.
Yeah.
What I love so much about you, Lindsay, is that you are just legit yourself and real and honest. And even though we're on the radio, we can throw F-bombs on the show.
Yay! Okay, that begins I can like shake this all out then.
You
see me on edge? I'm like, okay.
Don't say anything.
Yeah.
But I really, truly, I want this show to be a breath of fresh air, especially in the money space, because it can be really uptight and formal. And people don't necessarily want to say what's really on their mind when it comes to money. Mm-hmm. So I think you're the perfect guest to talk about mindset. And I want you to share all the amazing things that you're up to.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're in for a treat today, listeners, for Lindsay. So do you want, I prefer that you introduce yourself in your own way rather than me reading your formal bio. So yeah, who are you? What are you up to?
Let's see. I am Lindsay Paoli. I'm a former therapist and now the Mind Performance Coach. So I teach executives or corporations how to make mental health their greatest asset rather than their secret undermining by making mental health approachable and positive. Like, we see mental health as a problem, and it really is, when used properly, our best tool. But a lot of people don't recognize that we can do that. So
there's that stigma.
For sure. Absolutely.
Crazy stigma that the only reason that you need to go see a therapist is that you're broken.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. With money too, I don't know where I was going with that. I was just like, yes, I agree. My family, like, therapy was not a thing growing up.
Mine either. I was raised in an Air Force family, a very, very military family. So my grandfather and my dad both retired as chiefs, which is the highest rank you can go in the enlisted Air Force. So we were like really in it. All of my dad's brothers also were in some form of service. So, and then my dad's dad was also in the Navy. So we are like a very military traditional family. And do you think we were talking about emotions and like therapy? Absolutely not. It's very like black and white, get the job done, do everything to the utmost of your ability and move on with life. And so I did, but definitely talking about therapy was not encouraged. And so that really informed a lot of the way that my life was lived for a long time before becoming a therapist and recognizing what I'm trying to teach people now, that it really is, it was this like blind spot that I didn't realize because we were so against it and seeing it as a potential negative. Yeah.
Performance is, it's interesting that you still use that word.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the word that would resonate with me, like having been in a very driven,
yes,
military family, that it's all about performance.
Exactly.
Is that your experience growing up?
Yes, 100%. I was the ultimate high achiever. I was the standard golden child. I was, you know, honor roll and gifted and talented classes. And I was always like the teacher's favorite. I got a full scholarship to college, an ROTC scholarship. Like we went to a very small school. My dad was we were in Turkey, obviously, because he was in the Air Force. So wow. I graduated high school in Turkey. And when I graduated, I was like editor of the newspaper, editor of the yearbook, wrestling captain.
Holy shit.
I know. It was a small school. There were 42 of us in my high school, but still. Cheerleading captain. I was on the volleyball team. Like I did everything. It was everything. And that's just how I had been living life. It didn't, there was no other way to live. So just doing everything and being the best at everything was all I really knew. So now I find people who are just like me, and that ended up being my demise, because eventually I went to college and it was the year of 9/11 when I went on this full ride scholarship thinking like I was just going to get free education. And then
where did you go?
UCLA.
Okay.
So I thought I was just going to get this free education, and you know, the Air Force is, you know, the joke is it's the chair force. It's the easiest of all of
I've never heard that before.
It's the easiest of all the services, really? But it's because they're the smartest. So they have to like test to get in. So I just thought it was going to be cake. And then we were going to our biggest war ever. I had just graduated high school in Turkey. So it became a war on Islam, really. And it was something I disagreed with. So dropped my scholarship. And that was, I think, where my depression just really kicked in. I had worked so hard to get into a really good school. I had been doing the best at everything. And now I had nothing and nowhere to go and nothing to show for it.
Wow. Where were you in school when you dropped your scholarship?
So on your full ride, you get 1 year to kind of test it out and decide if you want to be there. And then if you attend the first day of your second year, you owe the Air Force your money back if you end up dropping out any point after that. So I did my entire first year and then like begged my parents, like, we'll sign a loan and I'm going to stay at UCLA. And we could not afford that. That was, my dad was enlisted in the Air Force. My parents had me at 19 and 20. And I look back on that now and I'm like, wow. And then they had two more kids when they were 25. My brothers are twins.
Wow.
So we definitely had struggled growing up, and UCLA at $30,000, $40,000 a year was just not even a possibility.
Out of state tuition?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where were you? Where was your family living at that time?
So they had gotten stationed in Germany. And so I didn't have anybody. And I hadn't been in the States in the past like 10 years. Like to say culture shock was an understatement. I had no idea what I was doing. And
are
I was 17.
Insulated on bases? How does that?
Typically, yes. No, that's okay. Typically, yes. But in Turkey, it was a really unique situation. So we lived in Izmir, which was, it's the third largest city in Turkey. And they just had an earthquake today and it's devastating. So just my prayers go out to Turkey right now. It's like the size of Manhattan, and it's still a pretty, Muslim country. And so they're like, okay, all of the Americans just kind of blend in and don't be seen. But like, my dad's a redhead. Like we didn't look Turkish. We definitely weren't blending in, but there's like 17 American buildings throughout the city. And you just have to show credentials to get in. And you know, there was like metal detectors and all your bags go through the like bomb detectors and everything. Yeah. So
did you have blonde? Are you naturally blonde?
So
if you're listening on the radio, I'm just curious.
I mean, dirty blonde. Yeah. Yeah.
Just picturing you in the middle of Turkey.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we were not blending. Yeah. Okay. None of us were.
Okay. All right. So you leave UCLA.
I leave UCLA and I come out here to live with my grandparents.
Out here where?
I'm sorry. In Las Vegas.
Okay.
My grandfather had retired, I believe, from Nellis, and they were living out here, retired out here. And I was so upset. I didn't even apply to UNLV because as a backup school, because I was like, I am not going to UNLV.
You never leave Las Vegas.
And then that ended up being where I went. And I think like everybody else, I fell into hospitality just mm-hmm. because that's the best that school offers, right? And I always strive to do the best. And so started my career in hospitality out on the strip, starting for the Mirage and then going to Wynn and Encore and Cosmopolitan and honestly, it was a 12-year journey for me to get my bachelor's. I was not interested at all. I was taking classes on like front desk management while opening the Vidara as the front desk manager. And I'm like, right. Do I go to class or do I go to my opening and like train my team on how to actually run right. this thing? I'm not going to that stupid class. Like, so I did not have good grades. It took 12 years to graduate. and my mental health was suffering this entire time because I see having left UCLA as the worst part of my depression and anxiety. It was the first time I was aware of it. I now look back and I'm like, I think I was probably pretty anxious and in a cycle of depression forever, as far back as I can remember.
For you describing the way that you were raised, I had, I'm not from in the military, but I was student body president, class mm-hmm. president, tennis captain, like whatever achievement, I was like an achievement whore.
Yeah.
Maybe for yeah. different reasons. But it was its own cycle of busy and mm-hmm. just constantly on the go.
Yeah.
Is that how you felt?
100%. And honestly, I feel like the last 2 years are the first time that I've like allowed myself or wanted to slow down at all, because that becomes your habit. Your habit is just to keep yourself busy, and you start recognizing there's something that you're avoiding by just being still. Because you just, I genuinely didn't know how to just sit and be with my thoughts and journal, or, you know, that all felt like there wasn't enough time and that wasn't productive, you know?
Yeah, I do. So from the original thought of therapy and like nobody for me growing up goes to therapy, and for a lot of our listeners too, therapy is not a thing.
Like you, yeah.
It's very stigmatized, which I know you're on a mission
yeah.
to shift. In my family, the way we dealt with and to a certain extent still do is through alcohol.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. yeah.
That, and I think the military actually, like my son's really interested in the military. We watch a lot of military shows
mm-hmm.
that's actually one way that they show people are going to the bar
yeah.
and dealing with things.
Yeah, did that, absolutely.
Was that something that happened or showed up in your life?
It did, which is really interesting because my parents didn't drink a lot, which I mean, I remember them being young and like going, like having beers at like baseball games and stuff, but they definitely didn't drink a lot at home. Mm. I drank a lot. And that I've never talked about this. I've never even thought about this, but
no pressure.
No, it's okay. Like I was 14, like in middle school, hiding alcohol in my locker, and we were just, you know, drinking between classes to have fun. Which is wild now. Now that I have kids, I'm like, oh my God. Alcohol definitely became a coping skill mm-hmm. for a large part of my life.
Mine too. It's like how I learned how to almost numb my nervous system.
100%. Yeah.
And all of that, like go, go, go.
Yep.
And even being young. So how young were you when you opened Vidara?
What was that? Like 2009, I think. So
I tried to do math in my head on this show and it never works out.
I wasn't, what year is it now?
No.
I wasn't 30 yet. I know I wasn't 30 yet.
Okay.
So maybe like 27.
That's pretty young to have that kind of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a couple of threads there and I think we'll tie it all together, but let's talk about money for a minute.
Yeah.
Okay. So in your pursuit of greatness and being the best and working in hospitality. So UNLV, this is a real conversation that people are having all the time. It's like, we're teaching kids how to do the thing and they're making $80,000 a year, $60,000 a year. Were you making really good money?
No. Okay. So that honestly was something that I didn't realize I wasn't making good money until I met my husband. Mm-hmm. I do want to go back and say, like, we were on like government assistance. We were on WIC growing up. Like I said, my parents had twins at 25 after having me. And we were, you know, base houses that are tiny, and I just knew there was not ever enough money to go around. And so
did your mom work?
Yep. Okay. Always. Okay. I don't remember her ever not working. So it was really important to me to be really successful. Like, I really, really wanted to be successful. And I think it was one of those things that kind of kicked me in the teeth to realize that successful and financially stable are two different things. I was really successful in my career and making like $50,000 a year at Wynn, and I was like, this is the highest you can go. This is the ultimate luxury property in hospitality. The next level up is I'm working even more than I'm already working and maybe making an extra $30,000, and I'm on call all the time. Like, how am I ever going to have a family and all of the things that I actually want?
Right.
Which is how I ended up dropping that career. And I was like, I've been striving to be the best instead of striving to live the life that I actually wanted, which to me, having a family was the ultimate dream. I wanted to be a million things growing up. I was going to be a painter, a farmer, a pediatrician. I wanted to be Clarice Starling.
Who's that?
From Silence of the Lambs, the forensic psychologist.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, Clarice, got it.
Yeah. An architect. Like, I didn't care about the job, but I always knew I was going to have kids and I was going to have a happy marriage. Mm-hmm. And I think that we were saying before the show, 30 is when it hit me that I was like, okay, this is not going in the right direction. And I'm not even close. yeah. And there was definitely not any money in it.
Yeah. So you're working like crazy. I know for me, my dad never made more than $60,000 a year. Mm-hmm. So we were very present to the fact that we had our needs met, but we didn't ever have more than that.
Yes.
And so when I was making $54,000 a year, like 29, 30, that was my first ceiling. Cause we're going to wrap all of this over to mindset, the second part of the show. So for me, it was like, I'll never make more than this. My dad never made more than this.
Yeah. And he's been his whole career, right?
Yeah. So I think it ended up being like net $3,200 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you realize like, oh, I'm not making great money. And was that when you met your first husband or your second husband that you had that realization?
My second husband. Okay. My first husband also, we were not making any money. There's a whole money story with he and I. He was actually military. And he was a firefighter, but he had left the Air Force and taken a bonus. I guess they were trying to get rid of people at that time. Mm-hmm. It was like after the war, obviously. That just ended up a couple years ago. But
after the big, like, Arab Spring kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So he and I had met in Texas. I went to Texas and came back. Everybody comes back to Vegas. And he was looking for work and ended up working. I think he was at Creech for a little while. I got him a job as like a valet at Signature for a little while. We were 25 when we got married and just trying to figure things out. And he couldn't keep a job. And so he ended up offering to go to Afghanistan for contract work, and he was going to make six figures. And that was going to fix everything for us. We weren't even married yet because it was going to pay for the wedding and then leave us a nest egg and have him pay off all of his debts and everything. But it was a year-long contract and he couldn't come home. I think he came home one time during that.
Mm-hmm. Did it fix everything?
No, he came home with $0. And I ended up, I had put everything on my credit card. So I was $30,000 in debt and I have no idea where the money went. It was a real problem. And we ended up getting a divorce 6 months later.
Yeah.
Because I knew I was going to marry for security and my dad was the ultimate provider and made sure we all were safe and fed and taken care of. And this man was just not that. And I was like, you're never going to live up to my dad and I'm not going to settle. So
good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. But that was the majority of your 20s. And when did you get married
at 26? I was 26. And then 6 months later, we were divorced. It took a while, but and then I was just like on this ridiculous path to find the perfect mate and fix everything in my life, right? If I could just find the right man and just have children, everything would be fine. And I went from one bad relationship to the next bad relationship. Mm. And when you're not taking care of yourself and you're not prioritizing yourself and you're looking for that from other people, it was just a continuous downward spiral. And my health was struggling. I was drinking a lot. My mental health was just in the shitter.
And, yeah.
I think 30 was this big turning point where I was like, this is not
what this ain't working.
Yeah. And that's where I met my husband. Ironically, after going to therapy with a boyfriend at the time, I was like, okay, fine, I'll go to therapy. Mind you, I'd been diagnosed with anxiety and depression at 18, refused medication and refused therapy for 12 years at this point.
Is that because of your family?
Like, yeah.
Just went past it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I also kind of skipped past, my brother was diagnosed as bipolar at 12 and has been medicated since he was 4 years old. And I really hated seeing him on like the Ritalin and the Adderall and, you know, at four years old. And he would say like, I have a tummy ache, and he would just be like completely different. And then he's what we call in the industry, like definitely like our, scapegoat child. Like I was the golden child. He was the scapegoat. So anything that ever went wrong was his fault, you know?
Yeah.
And so now I see this systemically, growing up. But anyways, I just really, distrusted the mental health community after watching my brother's treatment and throughout the rest of his life. So I was not going to go to a therapist and have them put me on medications that made me, you know, kind of zombie out like I would see him do. But I went to this therapist and we literally broke up in that session, in our first session. Dang. And I was like, that was supposed to fix everything. I was bringing him to be fixed by this therapist so that
I've done that before.
Yeah. And then we'd get married and have kids and everything would be great. And we broke up and I was like, well, shit, now what? So I asked her to stay on. It's Kimberly Malloy, actually. Oh, and you know her.
Hi, Kimberly.
I know. I love her.
I do too.
She changed my life. And so after I was like, I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to just keep doing whatever this is. Mm-hmm. And it was just mind blowing. I went single white female on her and I was like, how do I become just like you? I want to do everything. I went to the same school she went to. I like took her advice on private practice. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to be everything that you are. I want to be just like you. And I did. So I got my master's degree and, oh, I forgot to mention, I literally met my husband probably like three sessions in with her. Mm. She had me do an exercise on the things that I actually wanted or didn't want. And I happened to come across him on Match and we've been together for 10 years now, which is wild. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I haven't gotten the note yet from Voice America, but we're probably getting close to break. So I think this is a pretty good segue. And leading into the break, I always want to bring money through the conversation because, I think that's where we'll pick up in the second half also is talking about mental health and the connection with money.
Yep.
Because I've not met anybody who is unstable in parts of their lives and stable financially.
Yeah.
There's such an intimate connection there.
Yep.
4 minutes to break. Can you talk about what you knew or didn't know? So women are listening to the show. They're wanting real support. They're hearing they're not alone. And also that if you don't know anything about money, no one taught you anything about money, that's okay. Because most of us had that journey.
Yeah.
Did you ever, throughout the course of making money and pursuing success, learn about money?
I feel like I mean, I've coached with Lisa, obviously, and I've learned that I only learn the hard way. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning through a lot of failure about what to do, what not to do. And it, I definitely take the lessons away when they're painful.
I'm the same way.
Yeah. And that's not fun. But yeah, definitely nobody had taught me about money. And I think that that was a big part of why I wanted to just find a partner, because then he could like take care of me. Not that I wanted to be like a gold digger or anything. Like I was always going to work. I'm like highly ambitious, but if he could just figure out the finances, I could just do whatever, you know?
I get that.
And that also didn't work. And then I learned, okay, now I got to kind of figure this out on my own.
I like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Damn it, that plan.
It's that Taylor Swift song. I'm the problem. It's me, right?
I know. Yeah.
It keeps coming back. I've had similar patterns, similar challenges, similar conversations. Is that with money that I think that that's, thank you for sharing that. And that's the real stuff.
Yeah.
That we will attract people like us. So your first husband was in the military.
Just like me. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then we'll, at some point there is this awakening and there's actual research on this. And I would love for you to share in the next part of the show, you know, the research that you've done in therapy, understanding how at certain points in people's lives, like men's brains don't fully form until like 27, mm-hmm. right? So it's like,
It's also women's. We don't finish our executive functioning development until 25.
25.
Why insurance doesn't let you rent a car until 25.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
But I think men are less emotionally mature, but I think they're less emotionally mature throughout the lifespan. But that's a lot of training and conditioning too, I think.
Exactly. But like with money, you know, we'll just close out here and we'll take a break and we'll come back and continue this conversation is that it is an applied science.
Mm-hmm.
And what I believe really having not only done my own work, but working with so many clients is that it's just not that intuitive.
It's not. It doesn't really feel intuitive at all.
Like, oh, let me just put it here.
Yeah. I feel like I'm just like banging my head against a wall every step of the way.
But we get really good at making money.
Mm-hmm.
And we just keep pursuing that. And at some point we've got to make shifts.
Yeah.
You know, when we come back from the break, I'd really love to lean into the mind fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the thing that I'm going to lead with. And I'm teeing everybody up because we do talk about like, actually, I don't like talking about the technicalities of money. There's a lot of great podcasts that do that.
Yeah.
But the mindset mm-hmm. is really what turns me on. And I feel like if people can wrap their brains, pun intended, around the mindset of it,
yeah,
the roller coaster will subside. We can get present and we can create new results, mm-hmm. but it takes looking at the whole part of our life to do that. We can't just focus on money for a lot of reasons. So then that's why I'm excited to have this second conversation. And first of all, thank you for just sharing your story.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh my God, I didn't know that.
And I don't know if this is all gone cohesively, but
yeah, I do. I think that this is what I believe, that there is one person listening to this show, whether they're listening to it in a year from now
mm-hmm.
or in this moment that we're live, that is going, oh my gosh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, because I don't feel like I'm so crazy. Like I feel like, okay, someone else gets what I've been through or what I'm going through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what brings us all together, I think, in particular with women.
Yeah.
To say, okay, now, so what, now what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have a lot of good stuff to share in the next segment of the show. Yeah. All right, cool. So I'm Lisa Chastain, the host of Real Money. I'm so grateful that you've decided to spend your time with us. You have a lot of choices in your life, and I'm really grateful that you made the choice to turn this on no matter where you are in the world and no matter what you're doing, that you're spending this time. So come back in just a couple of minutes. We're going to break. We'll come back. We'll continue this amazing conversation with Lindsay Paoli. And I don't ever know how to make this transition, so I will say you'll hear us in 2 minutes. Okay. Thanks.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Not enough women are talking about money, and I am on a mission to change that. The truth is, so many women feel shame and guilt about the choices they are making financially. And if this is you, I want you to hear today that you are not alone. We are so capable of feeling confident about the choices we are making with our money. The problem is that for so many women, money isn't relatable. Industry experts are talking over your head, and this show is the perfect place for you to improve your confidence and relationship with money. With Real Money, I share real stories of women who are tackling their most difficult financial challenges. We are here to help you hear and understand that you are not alone in feeling lost or confused about your finances, so that you can build your confidence to learn how to make the right choices today. With Real Money, you're going to learn from other women how they tackle their biggest money challenges, so that you can get out there and start creating the stability, freedom, clarity, and fun you've always wanted. Join me, Lisa Chastain, each week as we talk about real money with real women for real life.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Real Money with Lisa Chastain on the Voice America Business Channel. If you have a question for Lisa or her guests, you can call into the show at 866-472-5789. That's 866-472-5789. You can also send an email to Lisa at lisachastain.com. Now, let's get back to the show. Here is Lisa Chastain.
And Lindsay Paley. Today. Thanks for joining us again, whether you're joining us on the podcast version of the show or live, maybe you're driving somewhere and you're hanging out with us. I'm just really grateful, really, really grateful that you're here. And I mean it. I mean it.
You can tell.
Also, what I mean is that you can email. We would love to, Lindsay would love to hear from you. How can people, other than following you on TikTok, how can they get a hold of you?
My website is lindsaypaoli.com. And so if you're interested in working with me, there's a couple of contact forms for either individuals or companies that are looking for training or consulting opportunities. You can always just, I mean, I'll give you my phone number. You can text me. I'm better at text than email. My email is a disaster. So 702-754-8798. Just text me. I'm really good with text. And I feel like that's a really easy way to get to know somebody right off the bat too. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Cool thing about the show is we've had people give their phone numbers out on the show and people reach out.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Reach out. I hope so. I hope somebody reaches out.
Yeah. If you're having a bad day, Lindsay's one of the best people to point you in, like, hey, you know, do this or whatever. So, yeah. Or whatever.
Or just chat with you.
Or whatever. I don't know. Right. And we'll keep it professional.
I'm one of those people that when people text me and it's very clearly not for me, I'm like, but who are you? Like, let's be friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want people to know that they matter. Mm-hmm. And I think you're on the same mission.
Yeah.
No matter what you're going through. Money's one of those things where I'm guessing. So you've had a journey. This is a great place to pick up. I think the conversation is that you had a meltdown of sorts or some realizations, probably more than one meltdown. I've had many meltdowns in my 30s in particular.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that I love you so much is that you, knowing your history and your background too, of like being like very straight A kind of person. Now you're just like, fuck it.
Yeah. I went from following every rule to being like, fuck everybody. I'm just, life is short and I'm going to make the most of it on my terms as best as I can.
That's right. And I think that teaches other women and gives them permission that they can do the same thing. Life doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah.
We can have amazing, crazy, chaotic lives.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
I think it's beautiful. And I think we're more successful when we allow that chaos to come out. I think like the feminine energy is meant to be free flowing. Mm-hmm. And the more you tap into that side of yourself, the easier everything else begins to start flowing.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Which is a work in progress all the time for me.
I have a very masculine husband. He's going to be on the show next week, actually, which I'm really excited about. But he's very masculine. And he challenges me because I want to drop into my feminine. And I'm like, this is very scary.
Yeah.
This is scary. I don't know how to be taken care of.
My husband is also very masculine. And yeah, but it helps your relationship too, mm-hmm. because just let him do his job and you do your job. And that's to receive.
I know. And as a type A woman,
I know my husband's listening. He's like, shut up. What are you even saying? Like, you receive.
Okay. More on that on the next show with Lindsay Paley. Okay. But when it comes to mental health, so you found Kimberly, which that's really cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I've ever made that connection. Yeah. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
And you were like, I want to be like you. And then you went and got your master's degree mm-hmm. in therapy. Yes. Or I guess, what is it? A master's in
marriage and family therapy, which it's a misnomer because it implies that we only see couples or families, but we're looking at mental health from not it being like a congenital disease. Is that the word?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Congenital like, disease.
It's just not it's not pathological. It's from the system. It's a result of the way that the system is operating. So if you have a problem child in the family, it's not because that child is a problem. It's because mm-hmm. the family operates to keep that child a problem. And so I've kind of just expanded the systems that I've worked in to now corporations and to executives and helping them to kind of shift perceptions. And, you know, one person can make a really big ripple effect. And so that's kind of the bigger systems that I work in now than just families on my couch.
That's the one thing I'm going to take away from this show.
Yeah.
The thought that the family operates to keep the child the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. We're all given roles typically.
I have so many questions. We're not going to go.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, go. We're all given roles.
Yeah. So we're all given roles. I mean, as a high achiever, I don't know what your history is or siblings, but
where do we start?
I know. If you think of it, like everybody can think of themselves and their siblings and like their hierarchy and how things were. And there's the unspoken rules that that's the way that things must maintain. So the tricky thing about going to therapy or starting a personal development journey is your family is the first to be like, what are you doing? This is not who you are, because they need you to be that person. And so you become the black sheep by starting to create this awareness and start shifting yourself, and that shifts the dynamics of the family, and they all try to overcompensate to create homeostasis, whether homeostasis was healthy or not. The same applies in workplaces. So you have the person who's always going to be the high achiever and like fix everybody's problems. There's always a fixer, right? But then the fixer gets burnt out because they never take care of themselves. And there's a lot of interesting dynamics in play from families that directly translate into the workplace.
Oh, absolutely. And then you have these, oh my gosh, I've done so much work on myself. That was the question I was going to have for you, is through going through that program, did you were already working with Kimberly, but did it force you to do that work on yourself?
It has been a never ending work on myself. Yeah, absolutely. The graduate program, a lot of graduate programs require that you go to therapy while you're learning how to do therapy. Ours did not. Mine was a very like practical, applied program. Mm-hmm. So I think we had a very small cohort. And so we also had a lot of like vulnerability within our classes. We were all kind of learning and growing together. That's cool. I've been in some form of personal development or coaching or, therapy ever since that first time with Kim. Like, I feel like you don't ever fix anything. You just find a new awareness of something that you can keep tweaking. And once you learn how powerful you are, once you can hone in on those things, it's like addicting. I want mm-hmm. to, you just get better and better.
Yeah. I have a coach right now and she's like, all right, well, what's next? And I was like, it is addicting to the sense that I know. So this is like the whole premise of the show is I know that the results I have or don't have in my life is really it's really directly connected to who I believe I am,
right?
Or what blind spots I have, or how I'm operating in relationship or mm-hmm. in the world. It all comes back to me.
Yeah.
And I just want to keep digging.
Yeah. Yeah.
Figuring it out.
Yeah.
so that I can create what it is that I say I want to create. And I know for me in my money journey and my money story, and then starting this business and starting the brand, when I decided I was going to write a book and share openly, my family freaked.
I'm terrified to do that.
Yeah.
It's on my list, and I've had entire sessions about, I don't know how my family will react to this, but.
Yeah. My great aunt, who I don't know if she listens to the show or not. Hi, Aunt Barbara. She's in her 80s. And she read my book. And I was like, oh, how is that going to happen? You know,
yeah.
My dad was like, well, Aunt Barbara read your book. And I was like, okay, waiting for it. She said it was great. And that you said shit too much.
There you go. If that's the worst.
That was really scary. So you had to do your own work. And can you help the listener know? So now you're on a mission, and this is just my words, so correct me if anything, but from the conversations we've had, you really want people in corporate America to have the opportunity to heal. And you want to help not, I don't like the word change, but more so transform relationships in the workplace, because so much of our dis-ease, although it starts in the family.
Yes.
And it comes over to corporate. It's, it's happening with relationships and all that energy. Can you walk us on that journey? And then I really want the listener to get some nuggets from you of like, what can they do? Whether if they're struggling with money. So I believe money, and follow with me on this one.
Yeah.
I believe that money is really just an external manifestation of disease and inner turmoil. Like what we have, the results that we have financially is just it's all coming out that way because we can actually see it.
It's like tangible and
like our health, right? Yep. Our health and our money are the two things that kind of show up and we're like, whoa,
yeah,
this ain't working.
Yeah.
You know, but it's almost never about the money because it's an inanimate object.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
For you in your 30s, so you're 39, we were just talking about, she's going to be 40 this year, y'all.
I know. It's going to be the best.
The best.
Yeah.
The best. What was that journey like to become a therapist? And then you were a therapist for a year and then you were like, something happened. Yeah. Talk to us about that.
So I immediately opened a private practice upon graduation, and that was it. That was my dream. So to tie this back, I met my husband who was making really good money in the same company that I had worked in for 10 years. And I was like, all you do is party. He was a casino executive. They're paying you like six figures just to have fun. And I was like running the hotel at night and making this, like, this is stupid. I'm going to make more money doing less. So opening the private practice was that opportunity. I quickly learned that it can be a grind to be a therapist because you're literally back to back to back to back with people's worst days and experiences and revelations. And not necessarily that I got burnt out, but I was so aware of how burnt out in the corporate world I had been that I was hesitant to do that again. So when COVID hit and I was an essential worker and everybody else was on lockdown and I had two new babies and was also working consistently. I think I realized like, first of all, this isn't sustainable for me. And this system is broken. Like everybody is starting to realize all of these same patterns that have been here that COVID is simply just bringing to light. But we're highly anxious, overly motivated by perceived success, which is usually bullshit. And we're killing ourselves trying to do what? And so I was seeing a lot of people who were either business owners or entrepreneurs who were really struggling during COVID. And I just recognized, I think what I had learned even with myself is that mental health is not supposed to be the last resort. It's we can do it completely differently and make it the best part of our day. And the brain is incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
So the fact that we only think of it when it's automated to make you feel like shit is such a loss. Like we can do it completely differently. And so I decided to get into coaching. I felt like there was a lot of it maintains the stigma the way that we're doing it now. If you only go when things get bad, then that keeps the status quo,
right?
And so I was like, no, I'm going to go into corporations where I see all of these high achievers who are doing all of these things wrong, and we're going to shift it from the top down, and we're going to make mental health like a great thing instead of this secret that nobody wants to talk about.
Sean Anker, do you know who Sean Anker is?
Mm-mm.
He created the School of Happiness for Harvard. And he says, he talks about how he went into a school and he was talking about their mental wellness week. He was an RA at the time. And they were like, yeah, on this night, we're going to talk about anxiety and depression.
And all you're talking about is what's bad.
He's like, that's a sick week.
Yeah.
That's not a good week.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, will you share what your definition of mental wellness is, mental health? No, it doesn't have to be formal, but just walk us through what you believe is mental wellness. Wellness.
I think what I've really learned along the way is mental wellness is the awareness. It's like the greatest awareness of yourself and who you're meant to be. I think when I was trying to succeed in all of these areas, they were not areas that I cared about. It's just what was the perceived definition of success. If I was married and had a house and had this great career, then I checked all the boxes. Mm-hmm. But then I realized I'm actually kind of this crazy outgoing and visionary person. And I had struggled so hard to maintain these boxes that I had no idea who I was. So that's, you said you're trying to understand more about yourself. I'm trying to learn more about myself and allow myself to believe that I can be anything tomorrow too. I don't ever have to be the same person 2 days in a row. There's so much power in the ability to grow and change. And so I think mental wellness to me is authenticity and just a great self-awareness and I guess the power of visualization and creativity that can come with that, I guess.
More of that.
Yeah. Please. Just unbridled whatever.
What would it look like if every, and I'll say woman, although I believe men are part of this conversation, but I champion women.
Yeah.
What would it look like if every woman on the planet had the freedom to just be herself?
Could you imagine? Yeah. And I agree 100% men too.
Yes.
I think we would just be such a different, less heavy world if we were just living more freely and caring less. I call it big, I don't give a fuck energy. So I feel like my clients will start getting to a point where they're like, I don't give a fuck. And I was like, that's it.
That's
you're
it.
There. You're getting closer. And and then once you start owning that, then crazy, beautiful things start happening.
That's so true. You have to go through and be willing to just take some of that armor off.
Mm-hmm.
There's this really powerful exercise that I went through in a program that I went through where you're literally visualizing taking off all of that armor.
Yeah.
And that's why I love money.
Yeah.
Because money is a reason that people do not allow themselves to live authentically.
100%. Because what would happen or that's not realistic or what if there's not enough or I agree.
All of the financial conversations. My new book's coming out and that's going to be what we're talking about in the book.
Exciting. When's it come out?
March.
Amazing. Oh, you're
coming out. Next. Yeah. We're up against it right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to get this done.
Oh my God.
So it's about being willing to first champion your authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
What are the mind fundamentals? What are the keys in the fundamentals? Because you have a formula too.
Yes, mm-hmm. I do. So when I first began the therapy journey, mindfulness was this buzzword that I hated. And mm-hmm. I feel like I said I learned through failure, right?
And you're a rebel.
I am
a
rebel.
Oh, you're doing it this way. I don't want to do that. It like that.
Ironically, mindfulness has become the greatest part of my practice now as a coach. So the Mind Fundamentals is an acronym for mindful because I'm also a true military brat and we live for an acronym. I just started recognizing that there's so much more to healing or what people are coming into therapy for than I think even they were aware. And I was seeing the same pattern over and over and over. And I'm like, okay, well, are you going outside? And especially during COVID, mm-hmm. right? When a lot of these things were limited and people were really just spiraling. So it became a lot of did you shower today? Did you change your clothes today? Did you get in an exercise today? Because I think we were all just learning how to survive. And then I think that has just evolved into, I call my company Fundamental Health. And I think it's really learning how to get back to the way that humans were designed and that our brains and bodies were meant to operate and kind of strip down all of this learning of what has been normalized as successful. So the mind fundamentals is movement, intention, nourishment, deep connections, fresh air, unplugging, and learning every day. And they tie into the way that your brain operates. And even that I look back on when I was in the depths of my depression, that I hadn't been doing these things. I wasn't taught to have this type of routine or to take care of myself every day through seven simple practices that we're all probably doing each day. But the key is to be aware that you're doing it and to take the time to notice that you're doing it. And that's really the definition of mindfulness, right? Mm-hmm. It's like to be curious and present in your feet where you are now, rather than, you know, four steps ahead, which we have deemed as the ultimate measure of success.
Yeah, that you're just going, you're running to the next, whatever it is. That's the question I ask my clients, because of course with money, it brings up a lot of anxiety or fear. Mm-hmm. And the one question that in like the very first working with clients is, if you're experiencing a lot of anxiety or depression with around money in particular, ask yourself, do I have everything that I need today?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that sounds like the mindfulness formula. Also, do you have sunshine? Yes. Yeah. The sun comes up every day.
Yeah. Step outside, go by a window. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you move your body every day? Most of us can. Mm-hmm. Most of us can. And if you can't, you can aspire to create some kind of movement, right?
Some form of movement. Mm-hmm. And that's also what I love about the mind fundamentals. It's you are tapping into what you need most that day.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be a CrossFit workout. It's what's going to feel good for you. It becomes intuitive. And a lot of people say that they lack intuition. But the mind fundamentals makes you focus so much on what it is that you need that I think it's the greatest lesson in being intuitive and re-finding who you are.
I agree. I'll say this. So we've got a few minutes to close. Mm-hmm. Being able to get to know you closer in some ways, I will say that you are walking the talk of mindfulness.
Thank you. Yeah.
And it's not always easy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come without like some moments where you're like, oh, this is really hard.
Yeah.
And your journey and your vision of being a present mom, being a business owner, helping other people, but knowing and having your priorities together and practicing what you preach, not only are you making a difference for people, you're living a life that's working for you.
Yeah.
And thank you. More than anything, other women need to understand like, that it's possible for them. Mm-hmm. And by you giving yourself permission to do it, you're going to show them the way too.
Yeah. And it'll really cool. likely look very different from mine, but thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I honor and respect that about you so much.
Thank you.
Really. Yeah. I've learned so much today, Charlotte, Ashley. Have you learned some things today? You can't hear them on the radio, but they're nodding their heads. If you're listening, apparently you're listening because you're hearing us. Give us some feedback. Let us know what you thought about today's show. And Lindsay, I would love to have you back. Mm-hmm. With 2 minutes to close, it's not like I'm putting you on the spot, but I also, we do some heart opening on the show.
Okay.
What's on your heart to share with our audience today?
That is on the spot.
I know. Sorry.
I don't know. I want to agree with what you've said, and I think that this is really honed it in for me today too, is that money is a reflection of everything else that's going on in your life. And I don't think that even in our work together that I've really put that together. Mm. Even talking about the ability to receive, and my biggest struggle is like receiving money. That all ties together. That's been an aha moment for me. I'm like, shit. But I think that's the case for everything too. Like the way that your brain operates, you start seeing it in sex and friendships and money and success at work. And money's a really tangible one that we tend to get more frustrated with. So
that's right.
I think that's been my aha, is like, what else is going on in my life that's making the money jump out this way?
Yeah. In my family, so we've got 1 minute to close. I'll share this one little tidbit. And I want you as a listener to think about your lessons in life. My first book talks about your money story. Mm-hmm. So you can go back and listen to read the first book and work through your own story, because that's where it starts when it comes to money. In my world growing up, we were told that you don't ever ask for money.
Mm-hmm.
You don't ever ask for help and you don't ever ask for money.
Yeah.
So as a struggling business owner, I don't know if I told you this, but I didn't make money for the first 3 years of my business.
I mean, legit. That helps me a little bit. That makes me feel a little better.
Because I didn't know how to ask for money.
Yeah.
Because I was told growing up, you don't do that.
Yes. I was also told that salespeople are like scummy. And that's, I mean, we could have a whole session
here on we go,
sales, I think. Yeah.
Will you come back?
Yeah, I would love to.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much. This is fun.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. Thank you for listening to The Real Money Show. I'm Lisa Chastain. You can find me at lisachastain.com. I've got classes coming up. I've got money moves coming up. We are on a mission to help women become the financial leaders of your lives. And I mean that I'm going to spend my breath, my vision, my time helping women really realize for themselves that anything they want in life is possible. And I believe that for you too. So thank you for joining us on the show today, Lindsay. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. And she's been my money coach and has done amazing things and unlocked incredible insights for me, not just today, but in all of our work together. So highly recommend.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Yeah.
We'll catch you next time on Real Money.
Thank you for listening to Real Money with Lisa Chastain on the Voice America Business Channel. Miss the opportunity to call in but have a question for Lisa regarding one of today's topics? You can send an email to Lisa at lisachastain.com. We will see you next time.